Ever wonder, like, as a law student, if the way a financial deal is actually structured, like the fine print and all that, could be a form of fraud?
That's a great question, and it's one that gets right to the heart of a really fascinating case.
Right, and that case is Charette v. Credit Suisse International.
Yeah, this one really digs into that idea, especially the whole tricky area of market manipulation. And, what are the responsibilities of underwriters, those folks who pin the deals together?
Exactly. And what makes Charette v. Credit Suisse so interesting is that it went past that first hurdle, that motion to dismiss.
Which means the court thought, hey, these allegations are serious enough. Let's see where this goes.
Right, like there's enough here to keep going. So basically, we're doing a deep dive today into this whole Charette v. Credit Suisse situation to really get what those allegations of market manipulation and misrepresentation against Credit Suisse were all about. And they were acting as underwriters, right, for energy conversion devices, ECD, they were called.
ECD, yeah, they were a solar tech company.
Yeah, a solar tech company, yep. And we're going to be using actual court documents and some analyses that people have done about this case.
Kind of like giving you a shortcut, right, to understanding a really complex area of securities law.
And super relevant, by the way, for anyone thinking about, a legal career.
Absolutely. This stuff comes up all the time.
So our mission today is to pull out like the most important legal and practical stuff from this whole thing.
The nuggets, right? The
Yeah.
stuff that'll actually help you
Yeah.
as a future lawyer.
Yeah, totally. We're going beyond just here's what happened in the case. We want to figure out the why. Why were these legal arguments made?
And what does it all tell us about the big picture?
Right, like what's the impact? So let's dive in. What actually went down with this ECD and Credit Suisse thing?
Okay, so backdrop first, right? Credit Suisse, they're this big financial institution, and they were the lead underwriter for two major offerings that ECD put out.
Offerings meaning like they were trying to raise money, right?
Exactly. They wanted to sell stuff to get cash. And these offerings were, let me see, yep, $316 million in convertible notes, and also 4.7 million shares of just straight up common stock.
So they were trying to get investors on board, basically.
Right, investors who'd give them money in exchange for these, financial instruments.
Okay, so that's ECD. And what was Credit Suisse's role again?
They were the underwriter. Like, think of them as the middleman, the one who helps structure these offerings, get the word out, bring in the investors.
Gotcha. So what's the problem, though?
Well, the folks suing, they claim that Credit Suisse didn't just help with this stuff, they actually set it all up in a way that allowed certain hedge funds to basically attack ECD's stock.
Attack, meaning like manipulate the price.
Exactly. Drive it down on purpose.
Okay, but how? How could they do that just by structuring the deal a certain way?
That's the crazy part. They allegedly did it through these convertible notes, setting them up so some hedge funds could do this aggressive short selling without the usual risks.
Wait, back up a sec. I sort of remember short selling from my finance class, but can you give us a quick refresher, like for folks who might be a little rusty?
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
So short selling is basically betting that a stock price is going to go down.
Okay.
You borrow shares, sell them at the current price, hoping the price drops.
And then you buy them back lower and give them back to whoever you borrowed from,
You
right?
got it. And the difference, that's your profit.
So risk is obviously the price goes up and you lose even more.
Right, you have to buy them back at a higher price.
Hmm?
And usually there are costs involved, like borrowing fees, margin requirement, all that jazz.
But in this case, you're saying the way Credit Suisse set up these convertible notes, it was like a short selling free for all.
That's the allegation. They
And
somehow bypassed all those normal costs and risks.
So hedge funds saw this and thought, free money?
Pretty much. And they piled on, shorting ECD like crazy.
And ECD stock, did it actually tank?
Oh, yeah. It dropped like 95%.
95%. Jeez, that's brutal. No wonder they went bankrupt.
Exactly. And the plaintiffs are arguing that, convertible notes, sure, they can be part of legitimate strategies, even involving short selling.
Like hedging your bets, right?
Exactly. But here, they're saying the main goal, the one Credit Suisse helped create, wasn't hedging. It was this all-out assault on ECD's stock price.
Okay, so we've got this weird structure of the deal that allegedly facilitated the short selling frenzy. But what about those misrepresentation claims? What were those about?
So those deal with what Credit Suisse put in their SEC filings, those documents they have to submit to the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Like the prospectuses, the agreements.
Yeah, all that official paperwork.
Yeah.
The plaintiffs are claiming that Credit Suisse straight up lied about the true purpose of these offerings.
So what did they say versus what was allegedly really going on?
Well, on paper, it looked like these offerings were supposed to allow investors to hedge their investments, you know, play it safe, which is totally legitimate.
Makes sense.
But the lawsuit claims the real reason, the one Credit Suisse was pushing, was to let these hedge funds go wild with their short selling, driving down ECD stock.
So it's like they were hiding the true agenda behind all this fancy financial jargon.
That's the gist. Yeah.
Okay. So we've got the setup. We've got the alleged misrepresentations. Now let's get into the legal nitty-gritty. What were the specific legal claims here, the ones the court had to consider?
Two main ones. Market manipulation under Rule 10b-5 of the Securities Exchange Act. And good old-fashioned misrepresentation.
Okay. Now, Rule 10b-5, that's the big one, right, when it comes to securities fraud?
That's the cornerstone, yeah. It's basically saying, don't be shady in the securities markets.
And to prove market manipulation, you need a few things, right? What are they again?
You got it. You need to show there were some actual manipulative acts.
Like not just, oops, the stock price went down. There was intent behind it.
Exactly. Which brings us to the next element. Scienter. It's a fancy word for basically showing intent to deceive.
They knew what they were doing and they were trying to trick people.
Right. And then there's the connection to securities transactions, yep. Meaning the whole thing actually involved buying or selling securities.
Obviously. And then last but not least.
Causation. You got to prove that the manipulation actually caused the harm, like the stock price dropping.
It's not just a coincidence, right?
It's a direct result of those shady actions.
So that's market manipulation and misrepresentation. I'm guessing that's a bit more straightforward.
It is, yeah. But it still has its own elements.
So you're basically saying someone said something false or didn't say something they should have.
Exactly. Material false statements or they left out crucial information.
And they did this on purpose, right? That slander thing again.
Yep. They knew it was wrong, or at least they recklessly disregarded the truth.
And someone relied on that bad information.
Right. Investors believed what they were told. Or not told.
And they lost money because of it.
And the loss was directly tied to those misrepresentations. That's the loss causation part.
So all these elements, did the plaintiffs in Charette B. Credit Suisse actually manage to convince the court on all this?
Enough to move the case forward, yeah.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is how the court looked at scienter and loss causation.
At that early stage, right? The motion to dismiss.
Yeah, exactly. Like just enough to say, okay, there's something here worth investigating.
So how did they show scienter, like that Credit Suisse was intentionally doing something wrong?
They argued that Credit Suisse had a motive, plain and simple, money. They wanted access to these super lucrative markets where people were doing all this convertible arbitrage.
Sounds complicated. But profitable, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Big money.
Yeah.
And they had the opportunity, right? Because they were controlling how these offerings were structured.
They were in the driver's seat. And did they find any smoking gun, like emails or something, proving Credit Suisse was colluding with these hedge funds?
Well, the plaintiffs pointed to some alleged pre-offering coordination. Like, there were talks happening even before the offerings were announced.
Which looks pretty suspicious, right? Like, they were all in cahoots from the start.
That's what they're arguing, yeah.
Okay, so motive, opportunity, some shady dealings beforehand. What about loss causation? How'd they prove that?
That's where it gets a bit more lenient. The court basically said, look, you don't have to give us a perfect step-by-step breakdown of how the fraud caused the price to drop at this point.
Makes sense. It's early in the case.
Yeah, they just needed to show a plausible connection. Like a reasonable person could look at this and say, yeah, it's possible Credit Suisse's actions contributed to ECD's stock tanking.
Okay, so a lower bar at this stage. Huh? But still, they had to show something. What specifically did the court latch onto in the deal structure and those misrepresentations?
Well, those convertible notes were a big focus. The court kept bringing up those perverse incentives they created.
Right, the fact that hedge funds could short sell without the usual risks.
Yeah, that really caught their attention. And those discrepancies in the SEC filings, too.
Between what Credit Suisse said the deal was for and what the plaintiffs claimed was the real intention.
Precisely. That was a big red flag for the court.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. What are some key takeaways, some big picture stuff that we should remember?
There are a few. First off, this case really highlights the responsibility that underwriters have. It's not just about putting a deal together and making money.
You have to think about the consequences, right?
Absolutely. They have to do their due diligence, make sure they're not facilitating something shady.
And the importance of transparency, right? Those SEC filings, it can't be misleading.
Exactly. Investors need to know what they're getting into.
And another big takeaway is that the courts are willing to get creative when it comes to these complex financial instruments.
You can't just hide behind, oh, it's all legal on paper. They're going to look deeper.
Okay, so just to recap for everyone listening, the main allegation in Charette v. Credit Suisse is that Credit Suisse basically set up these offerings, the convertible notes and the stock, in a way that encouraged hedge funds to short sell ECD stock like crazy.
And the plaintiffs are saying this wasn't just bad luck. It was a deliberate plan to benefit certain players while ECD went down the drain.
And this plan resulted in a huge 95% drop in ECD stock price, which ultimately led to their bankruptcy.
And legally, they're claiming market manipulation under Rule 10b-5 and misrepresentation in those SEC filings.
And the court focused on whether Credit Suisse intended to do this, whether they had a motive and the opportunity, and whether their actions actually caused the harm to ECD.
And don't forget about those specific details, like how those convertible notes allegedly made it super easy to short sell, and how the SEC filings might have painted a misleading picture of what was really going on.
So for all you future lawyers out there, this case is a big deal. It shows that underwriters can be held accountable even if they're not outright lying. It's about the structure of the deal, the intent behind it.
Like that quote we talked about earlier, underwriters can't knowingly enable a scheme to depress stock prices while hiding what they're really doing.
Powerful stuff, right. So as you think about your legal careers, especially if you're interested in finance or securities law, think about this. What responsibility do financial institutions have to make sure the products they create aren't being used to manipulate the market, even if everything looks legit on the surface?
That's the big question.
And how might cases like Charette v. Credit Suisse change how we look at these complicated financial instruments in the future? That's something worth pondering.
Definitely food for thought.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
You bet.
See you next time.